It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
This is the Hockey News Podcast.
It's the Hockey News Podcast presented by BetMGM and McKinney Hockey. Ryan.
Yes.
It's the best time of year.
It certainly is.
I've said that about five times throughout the course of this hockey season. But
this time you mean it.
This time I really do mean it. I am not lying to you. Yeah. This is the best time of the year. It's the first, I would say it's the best time in the sports calendar.
Mm-hmm.
Because we get NHL playoffs, we got NBA playoffs, MLB season starting. What a lovely, lovely time. But obviously we are the Hockey News Podcast. We're going to talk about that.
Yes.
So on this show, we're obviously going to be teeing up every single, you know, first round series. We're getting into that. But first, we have to cover some. We have to cover some news that happened before that. It was a Black Friday, if
it was
you
totally
will.
Totally Black Friday.
Like it was, you know, like every team decided. All right, we didn't make the playoffs, so time to mutually part ways with the people who failed to get us there. Starting with the Pittsburgh Penguins, who did not mutually part ways. They straight up fired Ron Hextall and Brian Burke. They cleaned house in there. In their front office, basically. And this is a very interesting path forward for Pittsburgh. It's one of the most intriguing, I would say, openings that are around the league for a front office, but also just in terms of what the core is like and everything. What do you think of this change?
Well, it was certainly warranted based on how Pittsburgh has fared the past couple of seasons, really. I mean, even when they made the playoffs, even with Crosby, Malkin, and Letang, they were never truly a threat, right?
They were just hanging on, kind of.
They were just hanging on, just, you know, just having a good time.
Mm-hmm.
We know Crosby and Malkin, and Letang for that matter, they want to win again.
Yeah.
It's a tough thing to do when you have the lineup they do, when you've been going for it for so long, you don't have a pipeline to speak of. You know, you can rely on free agency a bit, you can make big trades, but it feels like this organization needed that reset in the worst way. Somebody to come in and make some very tough decisions.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, what's interesting now is that the Penguins are owned by Fenway Sports Group, which owns several other major franchises, including baseball's Boston Red Sox. And, you know, from what I'm hearing, they want somebody that could be in kind of a senior hockey role, like an executive VP and a GM.
Yeah.
And, somebody asked me on Twitter, isn't that kind of what they already had with Brian Burke? And, yeah, Brian Burke's a hockey guy for sure, but he's also very good at taking things off the plate of the GM, meeting with the business leaders, locally, things like that, doing press. And we know Ron Hextall, not a big press guy. I think what they're looking for is, you know, the Montreal model, where you have a Jeff Gorton and a Kent Hughes. You know, Kent Hughes, first-time GM coming from the world of representation and agency. Jeff Gorton, obviously, with
Seasoned hockey man.
Seasoned hockey man with a great track record based on what he did in Boston and in New York. So I think that might be something that we would look at for Pittsburgh. And I'm going to jump ahead a little bit
here. Okay, okay.
Because one of the other major stories was Brad Treliving mutually parting with the Calgary Flames. Now, I tweeted out, Pittsburgh should be calling Brad Treliving immediately.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the thing I think of is, does he go in as the GM or does he go in as the senior hockey guy? He could certainly fill either role because he has a ton of experience and he's somebody we know can make tough decisions.
Yes.
As we've said numerous times, you know, he had a summer where his two best players in Calgary said they didn't want to be there anymore or they were not coming back, and he had to do what he could to keep the Flames afloat. Mm-hmm. If it had not been for Jacob Markstrom falling off a cliff in net
and
Daryl Sutter potentially
we're gonna get into that.
Losing the room, Calgary is a playoff team for sure.
Mm-hmm.
So you put Brad Treliving in Pittsburgh and you let him do his thing.
Let him cook, if you will.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
I think the turnaround, you know, you almost don't want it to be too fast because you want to be set up for success in the future, but at least he would come in with a battle plan that I think would work.
Mm-hmm. So I think, look, we are going to thank you for stepping mightily on the Brad Treliving news, because we are definitely, that is one of the main, you know, we've talked about Calgary all season long. They've been such a weirdly fascinating team, right? So we're going to get into that in a sec. But the biggest rumor, and I checked around, you know, in my limited sources on this, and, you know, when I tweeted out, it was, it then gained a bit of traction in that, you know, like Fenway, I know the Fenway Sports Group is like, they're ready to put the full court press on Kyle Dubas if he leaves. Like that is, I think, you know, other than him and Eric Tulski, I would say, and Eric Tulski in Carolina, who is like well known around the league, is like as probably the most respected non-GM front office member
in the
league.
The analytics god.
Like he is the guy who people look at. And yes, Don Waddell does incredible things, but like Eric, he's almost, Eric Tulski is like, the perception of him is, if you see Moneyball, in that first scene where like Mark Shapiro and Billy Beane are talking, he's the guy in like the corner of the room that Shapiro will look to when a guy brings up a player and he either nods his head or shakes it, or whether or not you can let that guy go.
Right.
If Brad, I think the only way that Dubas would leave because, to join Pittsburgh is if he takes that top job, if he gets that president of hockey operations and gets sort of like carte blanche along that, which means that, and I think that Brad Treliving would be suited for that role too, just because he's been there for so long and he's done all this stuff. So if Treliving is going there, I don't think he's being accompanied by Dubas, because that's what he'll do. That
too many cooks.
Yeah, exactly. Too many cooks. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, look, Ron. Like, I was. You can't pay attention to every market in the NHL. Like, there's just so many, and you know, we're here in Toronto, so that's obviously the thing that has the biggest sort of like momentum here. But I didn't realize just how sort of like vitriolic the Pittsburgh market got towards, I would say, the last 2 years of Ron Hextall's tenure.
Ooh, it was bad.
I knew that they, you know, that the temperature wasn't great, but then I'm looking at like the post-mortem columns that are being written. Specifically, I remember like Josh, I believe it was Josh Yeo's in The Athletic, I believe the title was like, Ron Hextall destroyed the Penguins, or like Ron Hextall ruined them. And I'm like, whoa, and then I look at it and I go, he's right. Like every other team, Pittsburgh, and keep in mind, this is a season, like we should, they are getting the brunt, like Pittsburgh, no one's pulling any punches, and they absolutely shouldn't, because not only do they have that core three, they have Crosby, Malkin, and Letang. All three are still either near or at like the height of their powers. Like Crosby just casually was like almost 100 points this year.
Totally.
Malkin did the same thing basically. He was a money in the bank point per game guy, and Chris Letang was still one of the most productive defensemen in the NHL. And another thing that never happens with those three is they all basically played almost 82 games this year.
Yep.
And they still missed the playoffs.
Yep.
In a division that, like, yeah, it was pretty competitive, but it wasn't. Like, it wasn't like the Atlantic. It wasn't.
And the wild card was certainly in play.
The wild,
like, they could
yeah.
have crossed over.
And the wild card, like, you are, you know, you should have made that wild card spot at the very least.
Yeah.
Like, you are, and we talked about this, I believe it was last week when they got eliminated, in the sense that, like, what was their downfall is they didn't take any big swings. There was that reported trade at the deadline of, I believe it was like two firsts for JT Miller, which would have been a disaster, number one, I think. Like, just insane. Like Vancouver, if I was Vancouver, that would, like, if I was Patrick Galvin or you know, whoever is in that front office, Jim Rutherford, who's on a beach in Florida right now, like, I would, that would keep me up at night, the fact that trade didn't go through. Because you are getting out of a deal that, like, is a disaster right away and getting two first round picks for it. That's amazing. But instead of doing that deal, they waffled on that. And instead, they did this, like, half midway, half sort of half pregnant deal to get Michael Granlund for a second round pick. And he just completely failed to mesh with that roster. And it's just, it seems like those types of moves after those types of moves, you know?
Right.
It was, let's not, like, swing for the fence. Let's get, and like, no, obviously no disrespect, but like, let's get like Jan Ruda, you know? Let's not go and get like a stud defenseman to put next to Chris Letang. Let's get like Jan Ruda and like, you know, and we'll let John Marino go, you know, just stuff like that.
That was the real tough one, is
seeing
Marino flourish in New Jersey and become one of their best defensemen overnight.
It's just like, well, one of the best defensemen in the league.
Yeah.
Like, it was a disaster, and I'm really, this, because this is an extremely intriguing opening, because you are inheriting basically like arguably the most win now situation in the league, mm-hmm. and you still have three Money in the Bank Hall of Famers, like the first two generational talents, I would say. Letang is still an incredible player. I wouldn't say he's generational, but he's still up there. Yeah. And they're still pretty much, like, you have like maybe one or two more years, and we say, we doubt them at, we age them at our own will here.
Yeah.
But or at our own peril here.
Yeah.
But you still have them for like maybe two more years where they're like, they're producing at this rate.
Yeah,
like,
that's fair.
If you want, this could almost be like a video game sort of and be a GM scenario where you build around these guys. It'll be interesting. As Ryan lovely spoiled, here we have Brad Treliving, who mutually parted ways in Calgary. What bringing to an end probably one of the most chaotic calendar years of GMing we've seen in modern history. What do you think of this?
Well, my big takeaway is, and just, sort of reading up on some of the local reports, is it seems like there was a fissure between Daryl Sutter and Brad Treliving.
Wow, and couldn't have seen that coming.
Yeah, but you know what's funny? It's like, it never occurred to me that, Sutter had the contract extension, Treliving didn't sign one. Clearly, it's sort of a wait-and-see thing for him. But it's like, man, if you're Calgary, did you really choose Daryl Sutter over Brad Treliving? Like, a guy like Brad Treliving managed to get you, Mackenzie Weegar, Jonathan Huberdeau, and Nazem Kadri, when basically you knew you weren't getting Johnny Gaudreau back and you were going to lose Matthew Tkachuk. So he got you three very good players for two very good players. And, Daryl Sutter, again, Stanley Cup winning coach.
Won the Jack Adams last year.
Won the Jack Adams last year.
We say that every time because it's true.
It is.
Yeah.
But it's also the kiss of death.
Yes.
So, coaches do have a shelf life. Unless you're like John Cooper, who has just consistently performed behind the bench.
And we don't even talk about that. Cooper looked like he was on the outs for a little bit there. Like, there were rumors that he had lost the room. Every coach has a shelf life. He just managed to dodge it, like, Matrix style.
Exactly. Yeah, so it's like, how long do you think Daryl Sutter is going to be your coach? Is it longer? A GM can do the job for like a decade if they're,
Unless you're Paul Fenton, that's about it. That's the only example I can think of where a GM comes in and they're like 1 or 2 years and they're done.
Right. Yeah.
Because the GM lays the foundation of the entire organization.
Exactly. So you would take a coach over a master plan that, again, if it wasn't for Markstrom having just a horrible season, the Flames are a playoff team, and we're probably not even talking about this. So to me, that's very strange, because Treliving to me is just such an asset for any organization. And again, if for Pittsburgh, it just seems like a great fit where here's a guy that's not afraid to go big.
How it makes even less sense is within that same organization, within the same city, within the same building, you have a coach who just won the AHL Coach of the Year for the second year in a row.
Mitch Love.
And that coach also oversees and is for his only two professional seasons, oversees the guy that your GM drafted in the seventh round, who has now flourished into one of the hottest goaltending prospects in the entire league, that you didn't call up. And this is speculation, because the reports were that the coach, didn't have faith in using a younger guy.
Uh-huh.
And so I go like, you chose a coach that has his replacement literally down the hall from him.
Yeah.
And over a GM that took one of the most just cataclysmic situations you can get as a GM. You build a team that wins your division, and then you lose in heartbreaking fashion in the second round to your most heated rival, your province rival.
Mm-hmm.
And then right after that, the two players that you drafted, developed, raised from children into men, literally,
yep.
say, we don't want to play here anymore. Yeah. One of them leaves without getting any compensation whatsoever. And then you have another one who wants out as well. And you somehow turn that into the guy who set the assist record, single season assist record for a left winger, and a legitimate first pairing defenseman on a good contract.
Yep.
You turn him into that, and a first rounder, and Cole Schwint. I don't know anything about Cole Schwint, but
he could be a bottom six.
He could be something.
Yeah.
And a first rounder in a draft that people are saying is one of the deepest in recent memory. And then on top of that, before they've even played a game, you get them to sign maximum term contract extensions that lock them in to Calgary through the remainder of their prime.
Yeah.
Therein negating the narrative that was starting to rise up and potentially plaguing the organization that players don't want to play in Calgary. Mm. The two superstars you get in a trade, in the trade for the guy who very clearly said, I don't want to play in Calgary, committed the rest of their prime to Calgary.
Yeah.
And on top of that, a couple months later, you then sign the biggest free agent on the market. And then you add all these pieces in, and literally what happens is your goaltender, who was nominated for the Vezina a couple months ago, falls off a cliff, and your coach I don't know what happens, but he just loses the plot completely.
Yeah.
And the agents of these players are speaking out, the players themselves are speaking out against him, and instead you choose that coach over the guy who built this team, who convinced these guys to sign here. Keep in mind, the three, like arguably Calgary's three best players or three most important players next year are going to be Nazem Kadri, Jonathan Huberdeau, and Mackenzie Weegar. Mm. And that GM that you just let walk out the door is responsible for them being in that organization.
Yep.
If I was those three dudes right now, I would be extremely worried, at least.
Fair.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. It's just, it seems... You ever seen Walk Hard: The Dewey Cox Story?
Yes.
Yeah, it seems like the wrong kid, Dad. You know, it seems like they chose the wrong guy, but who knows? All right, another guy who mutually parted ways is Peter Laviolette.
Mm-hmm.
Now the Washington Capitals have failed to make the playoffs for the first time since 2013-14. Mm-hmm. You know, you have Ovechkin. Obviously, they had to deal with an absurd amount of injuries this year, and they're a very old team, but. You know, Laviolette just didn't seem to be getting as much as you could out of this team anymore. Mm. They parted ways. So Washington now, very interesting coaching vacancy. That has really sort of become almost a turnstile since Barry Trotz stepped away.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the Capitals kind of interesting. And it's funny because a few years ago, I remember I was at an AHL game. It was Hershey in Toronto. Spencer Carberry, who is now with Toronto, was Hershey's coach. And just looking at what he was able to do with that roster, I was like, man, you know, this guy's young, but, you know, at the time, I think Barry Trotz was coaching Washington.
Yep.
And it's like, okay, well, they don't need a coach yet, but...
He seems like he's getting...
Maybe this guy's the next in line. Obviously...
Todd Reirden came in there, right?
Todd Reirden. And it felt like, it would take some time, but this guy's a good young mind. Mm-hmm. This is totally just me putting, you know, two things together.
So absolutely full factual statement here coming up.
Yeah, exactly. I wonder if Washington doesn't circle back to Spencer Carberry and say, you know what, you have a history with the organization. You probably know some of the current players who were with Hershey at the time. Mm-hmm. They weren't a super deep group, but still. I wonder if they circle back there and just sort of see if that's a fit there. Now, the other interesting thing is, what is the future of this Capitals team? Because as you mentioned, they are quite old, especially
quite
when it comes
up.
To their especially when it comes to their core.
Mm-hmm.
So, do they try to run it back with some tweaks? Because you do still have Alex Ovechkin, who can give you 50 goals a year when he's on top of things and healthy. Or do you take a step back and say, we need to replenish a little bit?
It's going to be tough, man. But I believe, was it Carberry or Chenoweth who was a finalist for, I believe it was Carberry, who was a finalist for the Sharks open job during the summer?
So possibly, I'm not sure.
I'm almost certain, and we'll get our producer to look this up, I guess. I believe it was Carberry who was in the finale there. So at least he's being looked at for other jobs. It wouldn't surprise me. And I remember when the Capitals came in here, all of the Capitals reporters, they all asked Sheldon Keefe, you know, what has Spencer Carberry done for this team? You know, like, he's very well respected.
Yeah.
So very interesting to see that. Another one, and Ryan, I very rarely am I correct. especially right. when we're talking.
Right, right.
This is one of those opportunities where I was correct.
You certainly were.
So I would like the banner to unfold behind us to say yes. I'm right, the sparklers to go up and everything. Yeah. But Brad Larsen, coach of the Columbus Blue Jackets, was let go. I had him in my early, after the first month of the season, I had him, I believe, number one in my, either him or Dallas Eakins. In who you know? Spoiler alert! It's coming up next.
I was gonna say you were right.
I was two for two.
You were two for two.
You know, like it's let me have this one. It's
totally.
I have so little in life.
Yes.
So he was let go. And it seems, as much as they did have injury problems, I can't argue with this decision.
Yeah, that's fair, and it's too bad because you know Brad Larsen. I guess it was 2 years behind the bench. It's kind of interesting, like, I kind of look at these things in, like, a cynical sort of way where, like, technically Brad Larsen, you know, once the injuries started yes. piling up, technically he delivered Columbus exactly what they needed, which was...
A tank. Yeah.
So, you know, like, if the Jackets get Connor Bedard or Adam Fantilli this summer, or even Leo Carlson for that matter, then they're going to be in a fantastic position because we know that they have... some great players already in their prime. They mm-hmm. have Zach Werenski, they have Johnny Gaudreau, they have Patrick Laine. Like, they've got tools.
Yes.
They've got some young guys in Kent Johnson, Kirill Marchenko.
They do.
So, you know, they're not dead in the water. I think, I almost feel like he was a bit of a sacrificial lamb, where it's like, now, you can go to somebody new, and you have pretty much a wide open canvas, because,
yeah.
you know, it's not a win-now group, per se. You could bring in more of a teacher if you wanted to, or you could bring in a veteran. Mm-hmm. I mean, maybe we're doing musical chairs here. Peter Laviolette, for example, I was going to suggest him in Anaheim, but maybe he's a good fit in Columbus. I mean, this is a guy that gets results quickly.
Yes.
Right? Peter Laviolette, known to be a turnaround artist. So maybe he's the guy that Columbus needs right now where, you know, you have veterans that obviously want to be back in the playoffs. Mm-hmm. Your roster, when healthy, is pretty decent and, you know, will probably get better next year just by virtue of some of those younger players stepping up and, again, depending on how the draft lottery goes. But you don't get there if it wasn't for Brad Larsen.
Yeah, you know, you're right. You bring up a really good point because I almost feel bad for him because he was... And this is not sort of a compliment to his standing as a hockey executive now, but he was almost like the Dale Talon of that Chicago Blackhawks team, and that like he was the one who oversaw all the pain.
Right, Jeff Blashill in Detroit's the
Jeff
other one.
Jeff Blashill, yeah.
I always think of where it's like you can be our coach when we are back.
Exactly, like yeah. like all of the pain, all of the growing pains, all of the hard lessons, and the you know, and just like the dog day, you know, March. We know we're like 20 points out of the playoff picture.
Yeah.
You know, but we still got to get up for this game and still make sure that these rookies know that, like, every game matters and stuff. Yeah. That was placed on him. And now a new, like, veteran coach can come in. Now that all the young players are here, he's going to get he's going to get Boqvist and Werenski and, you know, like, pretty much the entire roster back and be like, all right, guys, like, let's have some success. Let's have some fun out there.
Let's go for a wild card spot next year.
Exactly. And speaking of teams who I think were going for wild card spots this year, Ryan and I, shockingly, the thing that has divided us the most is whether or not the Anaheim Ducks wanted to be good this year or not.
Yes.
I believe they did. Ryan believes they didn't. But at the end of the day, Dallas Eakins, no longer the coach. This seemed like, I feel like Dallas Eakins had been on the hot seat like since before COVID. Like, I feel like he had been on the hot seat for as long as I can possibly remember, and this is just like finally the straw.
Yeah, I mean, so interesting in Anaheim, and you know, it being a smaller market, it doesn't get as much scrutiny as other places, so it is sort of hard to discern. And you know, and also, you know, Pat Verbeek taking over as GM, he's sort of one of those new school GMs that doesn't let a lot leak out.
Yes.
You know, he doesn't say a lot, sort of in that Steve Yzerman mold as
Lou
well.
Lou Lamoriello kind of.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. So, you know, it's hard to sort of get that insider information on, you know, what the Ducks were thinking. But again, you know, I mean, if they get Connor Bedard, then all of a sudden you've got Trevor Zegras and Mason McTavish and Jamie Drysdale, who missed most of this year
due to
injury. Like, you still have John Gibson in net. All of a sudden, it's like, you know, you get a veteran or two in free agency that help out, and in that Pacific division, maybe the Ducks are a wild card team next year with the right coach and obviously some luck.
The Ducks have, I believe, at least rated by us, by The Athletic and all that, like they have the best prospect pool out there, right? Like,
I'd have to look into the future watch things, but they're certainly, if not one, they're
I'm
very close.
Pretty sure they're either one or two in future watch this year. Like, they have, they're just, like,
they're... It's overflowing.
Yes. And so now you have a coach that's going to come in, who is going to be, you know, overseeing potentially, like, just a huge blue chip crop of talent.
Yeah.
And there's, like, a mix of some veterans in there. Like, you know, like I said, we didn't even mention Troy Terry.
True.
Who was their all-star this year.
Yeah.
You know, like, we're not mentioning any of these guys, and yet they're coming in here and putting up great. Like, Anaheim is... The only reason I wouldn't want Anaheim to get Connor Bedard just because every game of theirs starts at like 10:30 at night,
right,
Eastern time. And I think that would be bad for the league just because you're getting shield. Everyone's gone to bed by then.
Right.
But like, man, that would instantly turn Anaheim from like this plucky young team to like a potential like, you know, volcano ready to erupt.
Yeah, because if you have Bedard and Zegras
up front
as your big weapons, the backfill is much easier, where it's like, if you want to find some veterans that can, like, you know, play physical for you, back those guys up, that's a lot easier to find than generational danglers.
And then even on their blue line, like, Cam Fowler's still there, and he played 40 minutes in a game, like, you know, towards the end of the year, and you have Jamie Drysdale, who, like, injuries have taken so much away from us watching, but he is like one of the most hyped and you know, he's got the most potential of any, you know, defenseman prospect out there. Mm. They have, is it Del Mastro or is it who?
No, he's Chicago, but they have Olin Zellweger.
Sorry, Olin Zellweger. Yeah. I always get those two mixed up, but they have Zellweger, who was like far and away the best defenseman at the World Juniors that you and I saw in person. Like, they have a lot of really, really exciting. They just signed Henry Thrun. Yeah. You know, like, just exciting, exciting players. I think
he went to San Jose.
Oh, sorry, he went to San Jose. They traded for him. It was Nestoranko that they got, right? But, like, and he looked very good in his first little bit. This is one of the most exciting, I would say, like, in terms of if you want to be a coach, like, you don't have to face a crazy media scrutiny every day.
Mm-hmm.
And you have one of the most, if not the most enviable group, like, young core coming up for you to oversee, like, and you get to live in California.
I was going to say, and you wear shorts to the rim.
Exactly. Like, Anaheim seems like probably the most attractive, just from a job perspective.
For sure.
The most attractive opening. You think? Yeah. Amazing. All right. Those are losers, though. We're going to talk about winners. And so this is, you know, the playoffs. They've already kicked off. We already have the first night of game. You know, it's just the way the schedule goes. But let's do our previews. Let's do our picks. Let's start with the New York Islanders and the Carolina Hurricanes, I think we should start with. You know, they play last night. Carolina 1-2-1. Mm-hmm. They lead the series 1-0. Who you got, Ryan?
I got Carolina, and I'm not cheating.
You have to say games.
In games, you know what? I'm gonna say six, because the Islanders are always a tough out.
Yeah.
And they're gonna keep games close. You know, last night really came down to special teams.
Yes.
Overarching, Carolina, one of the best possession teams in the NHL this year. Islanders, as has been typical in this era, not very good possession-wise. So a bit of a mismatch there. However, the Islanders have Ilya Sorokin in net, who can paper over a lot of that, and has. I think Carolina, you know, as long as they get the goaltending, and they did for Monty Raanta last night, you know, they have more offensive weapons. They have... you know, Brent Burns was obviously huge for them in game one from the blue line. You know, Carolina should win this, but it's not going to be a fun, easy series for them. You know, because the Islanders, they do have some weapons and they do have that great structure. So I'm going to say Carolina in six, you know, and then like total goals in the series is going to be like 20.
Okay. I don't know if I can go as deep as total goals. I'm not that smart and not that...
I'm not going to do that for every series.
Okay.
I just want to illustrate.
Okay, good, good. I was worried about the precedent you were setting there. And I'm like, I don't know. Yeah. I was told there would be no math. But Ilya Sorokin is the X factor here. Yeah. He is, like, some years, and we've seen very high-profile examples of it, a goalie will come in and basically just lead their team way farther than they would ever expect to go. The most prominent example was Yaroslav Halak.
Totally.
Knocking off a Capitals team that I think if they had gotten past that Montreal team would have won the Stanley Cup. But
very possible.
There you know. And look, the Islanders, this is, you look at this on paper and you go like, okay, this seems, this vibes-wise, this seems like a bit of a mismatch. Like, Carolina is Carolina. They're such a structured team, you know. But they're missing Andrei Svechnikov. And even though they only got, like, five games of him, they're missing Max Pacioretty, you know. Yeah. Like, this is a team that doesn't have two sort of, like, high-impact punches they were expecting to have. And then goaltending is the X factor here because, look, we forget that Antti Raanta is very good when he's healthy. Like, he's always been very good when he's able to get on the ice. The only problem is that he hasn't been able to get on the ice. And this happened last year in that, like, he got injured at a critical time once again. And I start to wonder, like, I was watching this game last night, literally every time he made, like, a difficult save, I was, like, cringing. Like, every time I was like, oh, no, is his groin going to explode again?
Right.
And we're, like, and that's it. That's the series right there. So no disrespect to Frederik Andersen or Pyotr Kochetkov. But, like, I'd say Raanta is probably the best goalie out of those three right now.
I like Kochetkov a lot as well, even though he's
I say right now.
Experience. Right now, yeah.
Yeah. So it's goaltending is going to be the X factor, and Sorokin did everything he could last night. I still think there's another level he can go to. And I think once it gets back to UBS Arena, like, I think it'll be, I think the Hurricanes missing those two players will be in tough to beat this guy. That being said, though, I think it'll be Hurricanes, but I think it's going seven. I honestly, and I would not have said that maybe like 2-3 weeks ago when they had Svechnikov, but now that they don't, man, it's tough. All right, Panthers and Bruins.
Yeah, so initially, you know, it was wild because all the reports about
the
flu
Wilds,
bug.
The Wilds later.
Yeah, the Wilds later. The flu bug going around in Boston. And, I was sort of saying to myself, like, how wild would it be if the only thing that could beat the Bruins this year was a stomach bug?
Was a force of nature.
A force of nature, yeah. Like, what is the Corsi on pneumonia?
A biological hazard is the only thing that could stop them.
Yeah, the only thing that could stop them is, like, not washing their hands properly. But they came out and they beat the Panthers in a game that Florida, for the most part, played very well.
Yes, way better than we thought they would.
They took a couple of bad penalties early, and that essentially capsized them. And then Alex Lyon gave up the one bad goal to Brad Marchand that he just mishandled it with his glove. That was tough. Matthew Tkachuk was exactly what you would expect of him. He was great.
He was far and away their best player.
Far and away. I thought Aaron Ekblad really struggled. I thought Mark Stahl was their best defenseman.
Which is wild.
Yeah, and actually Eric Stahl played pretty well, you know, in his role as well.
That's good. Looking down from the heavens, they're really proud of him.
But I feel like because Florida did not win that game, I think it's going to be either Bruins in four or Bruins in five. I felt that was the Panthers' best crack at it because the Bruins are, unless the stomach bug gets worse, Patrice Bergeron didn't even play in the game.
I was just going to, like, they did.
They did it without their captain, one of the best players of all time. Certainly one of the smartest players of all time. So what happens when he comes back? All of a sudden, you're even deeper than you are. So I think this was Florida's chance to, like, sow some doubt and steal a game. Alex Lyon played very well other than that one goal. But I think, I don't feel like people were giving Linus Ullmark credit for making a lot of really good saves. And maybe it's because
while he was dealing with the flu bug, because he didn't skate before the game.
Maybe it's because they weren't spectacular saves. Maybe it's just because his positioning is so good. They didn't look as impressive, but I just can't see the Panthers putting too many pucks past Ullmark. And that's obviously going to be a problem because the Bruins roll deep.
I think it's it really is like a damning indictment of society that we talk about superficial saves opposed to what really counts, which is the wins.
Exactly.
And what is inside. Yeah, look, the one thing I will say is that there was a sequence in the game where Tyler Bertuzzi literally stole the stick of a player and skated onto bench and then broke it. And I think, you get away with whatever you can in the playoffs, and that's great. One thing I will say is that if Michael Bunting did that, the ref would have pulled out a gun and shot him on the ice. So I think that is pretty ludicrous. But look, man, the Bruins, they are, what makes them special is they know exactly where the line is. And they go right up, sometimes they go over it, but they are so good at just riding that line.
By far the smartest team in the NHL.
Exactly. Smart in terms of, like, making the refs look like bozos. And look, any team that does that, I'm a big fan of. But like, they are so, and this is what can sway a series in the NHL is being able to ride the line or at least play the politics of the game. As much as it sucks that there has to be the politics of the refs and player interaction. And this is a guy who came over the trade deadline and he has fit in perfectly for them. And him being able to pull off a little stinker move like that, right. I think is just like that. Just goes to show that this Bruins team. Is different. If they were able to overcome, like, imagine any other team gearing up for game one of the playoffs, you just set the NHL wins record, the best regular season literally ever in the history of the league. In game one, a flu bug ravages your team, it takes your captain, and pretty much, other than Pastrnak, best player out.
Yeah.
A bunch of other teams on the list of teams here would crumble in that scenario. Yeah. The Bruins came out, they handled business.
They certainly did.
What a team. All right. Minnesota Wild, Dallas Stars.
Yeah, so this is a very interesting one because, I mean, they're not too different. I mean, they're pretty evenly
this
matched.
This is the most evenly matched series, I think.
Yeah, and so Minnesota prevails in double overtime.
Which is as close as it can get, really.
Which is as close, yeah. They almost needed two games to solve one game.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, really it comes down to who capitalizes on mistakes, who gets that depth. You know, you look at it, and Dallas probably has more weapons, led by Jason Robertson, obviously. But Minnesota's got Kaprizov and Matthew Boldy. And I think the X factor at this point is obviously controversial hit by Matt Dumba on Joe Pavelski.
Yes.
Pavelski looked like he banged his head on the ice afterwards. So, you hope for a quick recovery from that. You hope there wasn't any,
Will likely miss game two, is what's said. And that is a huge piece you're taking
out there.
And that
is huge because Joe Pavelski just ages different.
Oh, yeah.
And he gets better as time goes on.
And I hate this term, but, he plays playoff hockey.
He totally does.
So much of playoff hockey is that net front battle.
Yeah, because he's never been a fast guy.
Yeah.
But, again, he's super smart. And he's got that wicked release. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, if he's out, that's a tough break for Dallas. I think this is going to be a slog of a series. I think it's going to go seven. Mm-hmm. And you know what? I'm still going to go Dallas, but this is the one I'm, the most unsure of.
This one's tough. Yeah, I'm the exact same way. This is the most evenly matched series. This is, I think it comes down to goaltending.
Yeah.
I think Dallas has Jake Ottinger here, who is the single and only reason Dallas pushed Calgary to seven last year.
Totally.
What he did in that series was unbelievable.
Yeah.
Phil Gustavson, one of the most underrated seasons in the entire league. This guy finished with well over a .920 save percentage in a very good sample size of games. He stole the starting job from a Hall of Famer and Marc-Andre Fleury, who's still a lot in the tank, and no one's talking about it. But I think at the end of the day, Jake Ottinger in a playoff series after what he did last year, after the season that he had, I'm not betting against him.
That's
so
fair.
I think I'm gonna take Stars in seven, but I do think this is going to be the most I think the Stars are gonna win, but man, they've already had a chunk taken out of them.
Right.
I do think they are going to have a bigger chunk taken out of them.
Yeah, it's gonna be a war, from now on.
Oh yeah. And these two teams hate each other now.
Yes.
And keep in mind, the team that committed the infraction, the team that committed the malice that threw the first punch doesn't have Max Domi on their team.
Exactly.
He is on the other side.
Yeah.
So that is, it's going to be interesting.
Yes.
All right, talking about maybe one of the biggest choke jobs we've seen in the NHL playoffs, at least for the opening, in an opening game in recent years, it's the LA Kings and the Edmonton Oilers.
Yeah.
Heading into this, we previewed it on the Staff Grab podcast, I had the Oilers taking this probably in six or so. Connor McDavid is as close to a cheat code as we have in our real life, in real 3D, 4D, whatever you want to call it, life.
Yeah.
And yet here the Kings are. They overcome a 2-goal deficit. They tie it. They tie the game with 16.7 seconds left, and they take game one on the road.
On the road.
Yeah.
Okay. So to me, this is such an interesting series because, and I think we've probably alluded to this in the past. You have such a difference in how these teams win.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, Edmonton, the tremendous firepower with McDavid, Draisaitl, and let's toss in Ryan Nugent-Hopkins as because he had
let's toss in a 100-point player.
Exactly.
Why not? Let's do it. Just for
Whereas you have the Kings, who are experienced, veteran. They can shut you down. Not only do they have Andrei Kopitar, who is Selke-worthy, but they have Philippe Deneau now as well, who is an incredible shutdown center. And then you also return Drew Doughty, who did not play in the series last year, on defense.
And you upgraded in goal.
Yeah. And you score Basalo. So to me, the exciting thing about this first game was, okay, well, who wins out? Is it offense or is it defense? And granted, the Kings scored four goals, ultimately one in overtime.
Which is more than the Oilers scored.
Which is more than the Oilers scored, which is the key factor they say in sporting events.
Most teams that score more goals than the other team, they end up winning.
They tend to.
That's what they say.
Exactly. So I had belief in the Kings before. Because, again, like, there was a path. If you can shut down McDavid, then you give yourselves a very good chance to win. They shut down McDavid in game one. They won the special teams battle. They only had, the Oilers only had three power plays. Scored on one. Obviously, their power play has been on fire all season long. Yeah. But the Kings had two power play goals and six opportunities. So, and I'll take this time, Cam Charron had a fantastic graph. When looking at penalties called in the playoffs, and what he found in his data is that refs call a lot of penalties at the beginning of series, and then it takes a nosedive as you get into elimination games. So if you're the Kings, and this, I would say this goes for the Bruins as well, you can play your style, and if you don't get burned early on, you know you're probably going to benefit
as things go on.
So I'm going to say Kings in seven, because I think that they can. If they play smart enough early on, you know, they've already banked one game. So if they can continue, you're not going to stop McDavid. You can only hope to contain him. Much like Shaq, unless you're serving him with a summons for a crypto lawsuit. But if you can at least hold McDavid and Draisaitl in check, and you have guys to do it on multiple lines, then you give yourself a very good chance to win. And that's what they did in game one. And I'm going to say Kings in seven, with the benefit of already knowing that they lead 1-0.
I was not expecting Shaq to catch a stray there, but all right, cool.
Can't hide forever.
One thing I will say with Shaq is that I've seen him be the spokesperson for Printer Ink.
Before,
so I think he just kind of endorses everything.
Why not?
And yeah, but no, like this is one of two series that, in the first round that are repeats. And I think with this one specifically, both teams are markedly better, so much better than they were in the years since they last played each other. Like not only is LA getting back Drew Doughty, they upgraded in goal with Jonas Korpisalo, they added Gavrikov, you know, to that back end for good, like, you know, for good playoff stuff. And honestly, if you look at his underlying numbers throughout the rest of the regular season, it's almost like you take a guy from a bad team, put him on a good team, and he starts playing way better.
Right.
It's crazy to think of.
Wow.
Also, the Kings got Kevin Fiala.
Yeah.
And, you know, to be a point per game player that we just are not talking about. Yeah. And on the other side, the Edmonton Oilers, you know, they saw the emergence of, you know, Ryan Nugent-Hopkins into a 100-point player, Zach Hyman into almost a 100-point player. You know, all these different sort
Matthias of... Matthias Ekholm gets
And I was going to say,
in.
And then they bring in Matthias Ekholm, who is like the, in my opinion at least, the piece that's holding the Jenga tower together. Like, he just changes so much for that team.
Yep.
And honestly, I would take Stuart Skinner over Mike Smith. Like, I think they upgraded in goal too.
Yep,
But the one thing that I think probably, yes, they won the game, but other than winning the game, I think the biggest mandate for the Kings heading into this game was contain Connor McDavid.
Yeah.
He was held pointless last night.
Exactly.
On his own ice in game one. This is a game that I believe in the first game of the playoffs last year, he got a hat trick. I'm pretty sure. If not, he had a monstrous game. This is one of those games with Connor McDavid, like he steps onto this giant stage and he explodes. They completely shut him down.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think doing that is a huge step. I'm going to say Kings in seven as well.
Yeah.
All right. New York Rangers and New Jersey Devils, as I made this comparison on Staff and Grab yesterday, this is, in my opinion, the fan base of The Sopranos versus Succession.
Nice.
This is how I view both of their fan bases.
I view
New Jersey Devils fans as the Sopranos crew, and I view New York Rangers fans as the hoity-toity Succession fans. This is the second most evenly matched series, in my opinion.
Yeah, and this is an interesting one. The Rangers, were much better. Sorry, I shouldn't say much better, but they played the Devils very well in the regular season.
Yes.
So that was tough. And they got to Vitek Vanacek enough where you say, okay, you know, that's going to be something that the Devils are going to have to be aware of. And again, interesting clash of styles. The Devils, very good possession team. Rangers, out of playoff teams, one of the worst.
Yes.
But the Rangers have Igor Shesterkin in net, who tends to be one of the best goaltenders on the planet. So that kind of evens things out. What I'm intrigued by is how fast is this series. If it's very fast, that benefits the Devils.
100%.
Now, playoff hockey tends not to be as fast. It tends to get a little bogged down. It's, you know, it's a little more physical out there. Not saying that the Devils can't hang like that. I'm just saying stylistically, this is a team that succeeds a lot.
They're not built for that, at least.
Yeah. So a great challenge for them. I'm going to say Rangers in seven. But I do think that this is one of the series that could go either way, depending on which team manages to impose its will on the other.
Yes, 100%. I think this is, and keep in mind, this is total speculation on my part, but based on how they're built, because what we normally see in the first game is the high, everyone's got those jitters, everyone's ready to rock, and we see high-flying stuff. Mm-hmm. Teams are, you know, they have that extra stride, and as the series wears on, it becomes more of that chess match, becomes more of that trench warfare type thing.
Right.
I wouldn't be surprised to see the Devils sort of take an early lead, maybe win their first two games.
Sure.
And then as the series grinds down, then New York starts to get their footing and maybe, you know, come back and make it a 2-2 tie heading into game five and stuff. I look at these two rosters and I just go man, these are two very good teams.
Totally.
The New York the Devils are the Devils. They're an incredible possession team, incredible defensive team that also is able to just push you on the rush. They have high-end talent, Jack Hughes. They got Timo friggin' Meyer.
Yeah.
You know, Jesper Bratt, guys like that. But they look at the Rangers, and I'm like, they're two deadline additions, where two recent Stanley Cup winners who still have a lot in their tank in Vladimir Tarasenko and Patrick Kane.
Yeah.
And they definitely have the edge in goaltending for sure. In a guy whose down season was a .919 save percentage.
Right. His bad year was everybody else's good
year. His bad year is a year that would get any other goalie in the league a $6.57 million contract.
Right.
It's insane that we call it a bad year. It's absurd. He was one of the best goalies in the league, and we're but he's not a .930. Okay.
Yeah.
And now he's going to play in a playoff game against a heated sort of cross highway rival, really.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's cool. I think the Rangers are going to win this. This is purely based on goaltending, which is usually my X factor in determining. But this is another series that I think is going seven. I think this is going to be a knockdown, drag them out.
Yeah.
This is going to be just a complete slugfest, a street fight. This is going to be the Sopranos versus the Lupertazzis, which is the New Jersey crew when they got into a big fight with the New York crew in the Sopranos. I think this is going to be an extremely entertaining series. I think the fan bases are going to be extremely entertaining in
this.
Just based on the amount of New York accents they're going to be throwing at each other.
Yeah.
I can't wait to see that. But yes, I think it's going to be Rangers in seven. But boy, oh boy, I think it's going to be close. So Tony Soprano, do not break my kneecaps for saying that.
There you go.
All right. Lightning versus Leafs. Leafs in five. Next series.
Yeah.
So it's Lightning versus the Leafs. The second repeat, one team, coming in hot and are a markedly better roster than the last time they faced, whereas another team, the other team, they've played more hockey over the past 3 years than any other team has, and admitted during their availability today that there was a lot of mental fatigue that came down to them the stretch drive. What do we see this? We're going to be at game one tonight.
Yeah.
What do we see this?
To me, this is almost purely a psychological series.
Yes.
In terms of the Leafs, we all know they need to break through. This group has never won in the first round. And they just have to do it. Now, the benefit, obviously, you have your superstars, Auston Matthews, Mitch Marner, you have John Tavares, you have William Nylander, but you added Ryan O'Reilly at the deadline, and Nola Acciari for that matter as well. Ryan O'Reilly, Conn Smythe winner, consummate playoff performer, two-way center. I think he gives the Leafs an edge here because the Tampa roster is not as deep as it once was.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously they have the highlight guys. They have Kucherov, they have Stamkos, they have Braden Point. Anthony Cirelli, to me, is one of the finest two-way players in the game and has been for years now.
Yeah.
But you look at, as the roster goes down, it's like the depth just doesn't feel the same. Mm-hmm. And again, because they've played so much, it's like, how much can you put on Victor Hedman, especially with no Ryan McDonagh anymore?
And he had a down year this year.
And he had a down year because he was doing a lot. You know, Mikhail Sergachev, I think you could say the same thing. It's like, how much can you get from him, even though he is younger? You still have Andrei Vasilevsky in net. And again, one of the best playoff goaltenders of this generation.
Ever.
That's fair. So the Leafs, it's like, on paper, they should win this series, but they actually have to do it.
Yes.
And they have to have that belief,
yep.
and they have to pull it off. And Tampa, I mean, as much as you want to win every year, they're kind of playing with house money where they've got their rings, you know, they've established that legacy. Mm-hmm. To them, it's like, hey, let's just do it again. What's the worst that can happen?
Yeah, well, it's funny because Pat Maroon basically said that exact same thing where this morning, where he's like, you only get to play this sport for so long.
For sure.
Why not try and win every time?
Yeah.
So I did a fun little trip down memory lane yesterday in preparation for this podcast, and that I was looking at the Leafs. I was looking at the lineups between these two teams for Game 1. Mm. And I cannot believe, I firmly believe that up until this year, last year's Leafs roster was like the deepest I had seen in a very, very long time. Potentially, I'm 27 years old, potentially my lifetime. I cannot believe that Leafs team pushed that Tampa roster to 7.
Yeah.
This Leafs team is so, like, Ilya Labushkin was on the top pair. Jack Campbell was in net. The fourth line was Wayne Simmonds, Colin Blackwell, and Kyle Clifford. Mm. That was literally the fourth line. This team is so much better at every single position group, and I think Tampa got worse.
Yeah.
Tampa is, and John Cooper, like, literally was emotional about it, talking about losing Ryan McDonagh and his prodigal son, Andre Palat.
Right.
And then on top of that, we don't know if Tanner Jeannot is going to play. He was a big roster addition. And then you're relying on guys like Mikey Isamont and Nick Perbix and guys like that to sort of round out your depth. I think the Leafs, at least on paper, like you said, are way, like, they should be heavily favored. Yeah. And a lot of odds makers have. Like, I believe Dom Lecision, former THN intern at The Athletic, said that I believe the Leafs had, like, I believe it was a 69% to 39% or 31% like chance of the Leafs in terms of odds and winning. But you're right, they have to do it. And it's going to be tough. But I'm legit, and that wasn't a joke. I'm legitimately saying Leafs in 5. That is my bold prediction. I think if they get over this hump, I think that it is going to be far less climactic than people think it's going to be.
Fair. I'm going to say Leafs in 6 because it cannot be Leafs in 7.
Yes. I think if you get to game 7, I'm taking Tampa all the way.
Right.
I just think that is such a boogeyman, and inevitably it'll go there. But I think if the Leafs are able to conquer this, and I do,
they'll do it quickly.
I think this is the best chance they will ever have. Really, I think it'll be, like I said, a lot less climactic than people are making it out to be. All right,
fair.
Jets and Golden Knights. There's not a ton really to talk about in this series, at least in my end. Like,
yeah, it's interesting. Like, I look at the Jets, and you know, Connor Hellebuck in net. I think that's a huge advantage for them. Vegas, on the other hand, getting healthy. Mark Stone back. And again, you know, a group that has a ton of weapons out there. I'm going to take Vegas. It just felt like Winnipeg, we know they struggled down the stretch. February was a nightmare for them, and you know, they barely got in. Rick Bowne is a very good playoff coach.
Yes.
So if he can give them the winning strategy, then I think it'll be tight. But I think Vegas is just like, you know, Bruce Cassidy has been great behind the bench for them. It'll be very interesting. I'm going to say Vegas in 6. I can see it going 7 as well.
Yeah, I'm going Vegas in 6. Mm. I think Vegas is just deeper. I think they have, in terms of like playoff useful high-end talent, I think they're doing that. Vegas, you know, has already beaten the Jets in the playoffs before, if you remember. I think they're better. Like, I just think they are a better hockey team.
Yeah, it's really kind of what it comes down to.
And it just seems like the vibes are way better in Vegas than there are in the Jets. I would say this generation of Jets hockey was saved by the fact they made the playoffs this year. Because if they didn't, everyone was gone, I think. Because we saw the longest and most dramatic eye roll of all time from Rick Bonus talking about Mark Scheifele and how he basically was like going against his offensive coaching and stuff. I think there's still a lot of tension in that organization. There has been for a long time. And Vegas, everyone just seems kind of happy there. You know, they're getting their captain back.
Yep.
They're arguably the best player. Yep. They're excited. Phil Kessel is on your team for a playoff run.
Always fun.
I'm not betting against that. Yep. Jack Eichel, his first ever playoff game.
Yeah.
I'm excited for it, and I think it's going to be Vegas in six. Connor Hellebuck will get Winnipeg to that sixth game, I think. But yeah, it's Vegas. And finally, we got the defending Stanley Cup champion, the Colorado Avalanche, versus the rookie, the newbie team,
yeah.
The Seattle Kraken, making their first ever playoff appearance.
Yeah, I'm going to say Colorado in five here, not to be a downer. But, you know, Seattle, I mean, full marks to them. Dave Haxtell's done a great job with that group. And credit to Ron Francis, too, for having a monster summer.
Yes.
And, you know, Seattle, a lot of it's kind of done by committee. Vince Dunn, obviously a breakout star for them on defense. I don't think they have the goaltending, especially going against a Colorado team that has Nathan MacKinnon and has Miko Rantanen.
You could just list their entire forward core, basically.
A Colorado team that has Colorado.
Yes, exactly. That has hockey players.
That is hockey players that are on the Avalanche.
Yeah.
You know, it's too bad Gabriel Landeskog will not be part of that journey. But I'm sure off the ice he's going to be a huge leader for them. For Seattle, I think it's great for the fan base that they'll be able to experience playoff hockey. And I think maybe that game three in Seattle, I could see the Kraken stealing that one, maybe in overtime. Let's just Disney it up a bit. Why not, right? But otherwise, I think Colorado's pretty much going to roll.
Yeah, I think it's going to be Colorado in a sweep. I think it'll be a lot like when the Winnipeg Jets came back to Winnipeg and had that first playoff series where they got swept in the first round, but the crowd was nuts. I think it'll be like that, where it'll be a great first taste for that organization, getting this hockey team back. It's going to be good, but man, it's going to be a bloodbath. I think you have Martin Jones in net. Like, that's all I need to say. Like, or Philip Grubauer, both of them were sub 890 this year. So
Plus, Colorado knows all about Philip Grubauer because he played for them.
Exactly. All right, so those are our predictions. Great. Now it's my time for revenge.
Let's do it.
Because Ryan, last week, he did the game, you know, is it an IKEA furniture name or is it a metal name? So I took half of that, IKEA furniture, but Ryan knows everything about, you know, like hardcore bands. Yes. I know a lot about Star Wars.
So I'm doing
Star Wars character or IKEA. And I have to turn my computer around from you.
Yes.
But let's start with one. So it's going to be, is this a Star Wars character or is this an IKEA furniture item?
Awesome.
Let's start off with Bib Fortuna.
Bib Fortuna. Okay, I'm going to go Star Wars character on that one.
Okay.
Yeah, because IKEA items tend to be one name.
Okay, yeah, you got that.
Boom.
You got that. That's great. All right, now let's go to another one. Bosk.
Bosk. Would that be SK?
It's B-O-S-S-K.
Ooh. That feels like one too many S's for IKEA, so I'm going to say Star Wars.
Wow, you got it. You're two for... Man. All right.
Boom. I know my IKEA.
You really do. It's crazy. All right. Here, we're going to go for another one.
All right.
Sebulba.
That, to me, is... I don't want to say definitely IKEA, but I'm going to say IKEA.
That's a Star Wars character.
Ooh.
Very interesting. Okay. All right, another one we got here is Rittig Olga.
One word or two?
Two.
I'm going to say Star Wars. Then.
That's an IKEA.
Ooh, yeah. Okay. What
there
is it?
Go. It is... the Rittig Olga is a curtain ring,
I believe. Gotcha. Okay. I've probably bought them before.
Exactly. So now, look, they can be two names. They can be one. It doesn't...
I guess so.
Here's another one. I'm going to go Yaro Tapal.
Yaro Tapal. Yaro with a Y or a J?
J.
With a J. Ooh. Are there soft J's in the Star Wars universe? Very good question.
You tell me, man.
I'm going to go Star Wars on that one.
That is a Star... I thought that was going to be the one that got you because of the soft J.
Yeah.
Very, very interesting there. All right, and the last one, Seer Junda.
That one to me sounds IKEA.
That's a Star Wars character.
Ooh, well
so
played,
Ryan
well
did
played.
Better than I did on his game, absolutely. But man, that but see how difficult it is.
It is.
And these are, to be fair, I did some deep cut names from Star Wars.
I wouldn't have known either way.
If I had said Yoda, you probably would have guessed that.
If you said Mos Eisley, I would have been
IKEA. It's a No, I would hope not. It's a wretched hive of scum and villainy. But no, that's it. Ryan at least did better, but I got him a little bit, so my thirst for vengeance remains unquenched.
Slaked at least?
And that at least, yeah. But vengeance is what slaked. It's what gets me up in the morning, and at least I'm still riding. So enjoy the first round of the playoffs here. We'll be back next week, obviously, to recap a lot of series that will be either towards finishing or getting into the later stages. Ryan, we'll see you at the game tonight for Game 1 Leafs Lightning. And enjoy this lovely time in the sports calendar.